Go ahead, what?
No. You caught me. I didn't know we were going on air.
I should have now.
Hot mic,
we're going live. Welcome in. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, you're the cure right here on AM 580, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. And, of course, our office number at the clinic, 771-1160, and that was Melody Wilkes.
Hello.
Dr. Ben Edwards, good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
I have to do something first.
Yes, what?
Because I said I would.
Yes.
I promised my sister I would say hello. She's listening, so hello, Tamara.
Oh, nice. Oh, good.
Have fun.
I'll
on
say
your
hello
way to tech.
As well. Good. She's what? I'm sorry?
She's on her way to tech.
Oh, she's on her way in the
mm-hmm.
car. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, well, speaking of that, if you're out driving around, be careful, but you can call in 745-5800.
Yeah,
if you have a question for the doctor, you can certainly do that, or text in 806-745-5800 along the way. But you're the cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Edwards. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning, Wade. I'm doing well.
Good, good. Glad to see you back in the saddle. So what's the latest and greatest on our health? What can you enlighten us today on and say, this is what you need to do to achieve optimum health, the one thing that we must do?
Well, you've got to be
down.
One with your wife.
Be one with the wife?
One with your wife.
That helps.
There you go.
Oneness is key. You know, when you're not one, that fight or flight hormone jacks
kicks in.
Up.
Yeah, not good.
Everything's downhill after that. So it's key. But I did have a few calls last week or emails to the office after the show last week about diabetes. So I wanted to recap or maybe hone in on a couple of points that I want to clear on. So if you missed last week, basically I stated that I didn't agree with American Diabetes Association's statement on their website that type 2 diabetes is a chronic progressive disease.
Oh, okay.
Which, if you choose to not get to the root cause, it is a chronic progressive disease. But if you choose to deal with the root cause, then it's just a reversible consequence of your diet, basically. So I had some questions on insulin and insulin resistance, and basically I want to just go through a recap real quick to teach people how diabetes, type 2 diabetes, occurs. And basically what we're talking about is insulin, which is a hormone. You know, hormones like testosterone and estrogen, and vitamin D is actually a hormone too, but insulin's just another hormone. So hormones are a communicating molecule that, you know, one gland will secrete out to another gland or one organ to another organ to communicate a message. So insulin is a hormone secreted by the pancreas, and it interacts with different cells in the body and in the liver. Basically, you can think of it as a key into a keyhole. Insulin's the key, and the keyhole is a receptor, insulin receptor, insulin keyhole. And this keyhole's on the cell membrane of all these different cells. So insulin's got to fit into that keyhole in order to open the door on that cell to allow blood sugar, so sugar molecules that are in the blood, to get out of the blood and into the cell. So there's a doorway the sugar's got to pass through. And that door slams shut until insulin comes in with the key in the keyhole and opens the door.
Right.
And then the sugar gets out of your blood and into the cell where it needs to be, and it's utilized as fuel for the cell to make ATP, your energy molecule. So if that door is shut, then the sugar stays in your blood, And when you prick your finger with a glucometer and check your blood sugar level, it'll be high. So the whole issue here is there's a closed door. There's a closed pathway. And it's closed because the key is not fitting into the keyhole properly.
And when you take a drug like metformin, it's supposed to open that up.
Basically, yes.
Supposedly.
Yes. I want everyone to understand the problem is not a lack of keys. Your pancreas is making the keys. You've got the insulin there. It's in the bloodstream. It just can't fit into the keyhole, so the door stays closed. And that's a key point. Now, the pancreas the pancreas is smart, but not super smart. Basically, it's got a sensor for blood sugar levels in it, and all it sees is, man, my blood sugar level's a little high. I better start making more insulin. So it starts making more keys because it sees the sugars high in the blood. It doesn't know that the keys aren't the problem. It's the keyhole that's the problem. So your insulin levels start to rise over time. Your pancreas starts putting out more and more keys, more and more insulin. But that doesn't fix the problem. And in fact, that makes the problem worse. As you get more and more insulin, insulin actually causes the keyholes to get more and more bent out of shape. So there's different things that will bend the keyhole out of shape, but one of them is a chronic and repetitive exposure to excess insulin. So initially what triggers this whole thing is insulin spiking all throughout the day. So when you're pre-diabetic or even when you're normal, which again, I don't really consider anything pre-diabetic, either you can handle your blood sugar or you can't. Either you're insulin sensitive or you're not. Either your keyhole's clean and working or it's not. But early on what happens is when you consume carbohydrates, especially processed carbs, so that would be anything from corn, wheat, and rice, so pretty much that's a standard American diet. You start your day with some cereal and some toast, even if it's whole wheat. That's grain. That's a processed carb. So carbs basically are a bunch of molecules of sugar stuck together. And so when you digest all those different grain products, so we're talking crackers, tortillas, bread, pastry, donuts, bagels, sandwiches, pasta, spaghetti, I mean, you name it, all the snack foods pretty much. So there's the grains, corn, wheat, and rice, but then also sugar, just straight sugar, obviously. So the carbs are...
The sweets. Soda pop.
All the different forms of sugar. And sugar is in every processed packaged food. So if you're eating food out of a package, almost guaranteed you're getting excess sugar. And your average American consumes a pound of sugar every 3 days. 100 years ago, it took us a year to get to a pound. So my point is, when you consume these carbs and sugars, so carbs turn into sugar or consuming straight sugar, that triggers your pancreas to secrete insulin. So if you start your day with oat with orange juice, which is sugar, and skim milk, which is sugar, and then a cereal, which turns into sugar, you're getting this huge sugar rush into your body. So your pancreas responds with a huge insulin output. And then that insulin kicks in to its keyhole, and all the sugar leaves your bloodstream and goes into the cell. So then you kind of crash. Your blood sugar level crashes. So then you feel hungry in a couple of hours. So then you go eat some peanut butter and crackers. So there's sugar in the peanut butter, and then the crackers are made of grain. So there's another carb. So you just spiked a little bit more back up. And you do this roller coaster all day long. Sugar spike, insulin spike. Crash, sugar spike, insulin spike. And that process, that roller coaster process, actually creates insulin resistance. That process of roller coaster of your blood sugar will cause your keyhole to get bent out of shape.
Well, let me ask you this. I agree with everything you're saying, but if everybody is on that roller coaster, all of us, I mean, because I'm sitting here thinking about just my day and what I tend to consume, my caloric intake, and I can see where, you know, I could probably clean up a lot of the carbs I'm eating. But why is it then that everybody is not becoming type 2 diabetes? I mean, it's on the rise big time. I get it's off the chart, but not everybody's affected the same. Why is that?
Well, everyone's genetics are a little bit different, and their body composition, muscle cells versus fat cells, there's a lot of different factors, but I can say that if everyone continues on a pretty high carb diet, standard American diet, you're going to get there. You may not get there as fast as some people that are genetically maybe predisposed. But and that's why, like I was saying last week, everyone needs to know not only their A1C, their three-month blood sugar average, but their insulin level. Because in my opinion, I mean, the statistics tell us about, you know, half the country's diabetic and another third or so are pre-diabetic. But if you lump everybody together whose insulin level's a little bit high, whose A1C is a little bit high, not officially diabetic, and then lump them in with the full-blown diabetics, you're probably looking at 80% or more of the population from that's showing signs of insulin resistance.
Wow.
So it's just a matter of time. Your doctor's not calling you diabetic now. You know, 5 years from now he might, or 10 years from now he might. So it's just a process that takes time, and in some people it takes more time, and I think it's more of a genetic thing. Of course, exercise plays a part. You know, how stressed out you are plays a part. There's lots of factors that come into play that can create worsening insulin resistance. So I'm only talking about one factor right now that contributes to insulin resistance, contributes to the keyhole getting bent out of shape, and that's the roller coaster. But there's other factors that will cause the keyhole to get bent out of shape. And, you know, we're not even talking about thyroid, but thyroid plays a key part in this whole process too. So if someone's thyroid is off a little more than others, that will cause the process to speed up as far as the insulin resistance. So there's lots of factors, but we're talking about the roller coaster one here. So if you only are on the roller coaster and you don't, and your thyroid's good, you don't have heavy metals, you're sleeping good, you're not stressed out, you're moving a little bit every day, you know, that it's going to be a slower process for you. You won't get to the full-blown, officially diagnosed as diabetes till maybe 15 years from now instead of 5 years from now.
Wow.
But you don't necessarily have to be overweight, right?
Oh, no. I diagnose a lot of people with type 2 diabetes and or insulin resistance. I see a lot of A1Cs. That's the 3-month blood sugar average. 6.3, 6.5, 6.8, 7.5, and they're as skinny as I am, which I'm about 160 pounds, 6 foot. So it's not about that at all.
Yeah, I saw a guy a few months ago in the drugstore, and I was picking up an antibiotic or something. I can't remember now what it was, and because I'm not on any drugs, but he was standing in front of me, and they'd lost his order. And this guy was relatively fit looking, and I overheard him say, because the pharmacist asked, "Now, what was it?" What? And he says, "Metformin," which is the type 2 stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this guy, and I'm thinking, "Gee whiz, you got diabetes. You don't look like you would have diabetes." You can't tell by looking is the point.
No, you can't. And that's why a lot of these guys and gals, but guys tend to not go to the doctor very often, are walking around in a pre-diabetic or an insulin resistant or full-blown diabetes, and they don't know it. So this is a silent killer, because when this insulin resistance, when your keyhole's been out of shape and your blood sugar levels start to rise because the doorway won't open on your cells, you won't feel any of this. You don't know this is going on until your blood sugar is so high. You know, you get up to 300, 400, 500, and you're staying there consistently every day. There is so much sugar in your blood that your body's kind of going into an emergency state of trying to get rid of it. So you start excreting that sugar in through your kidney to the bladder, you know, in your urine. You get to a point, there's so much sugar in the urine that it'd be like syrup.
Ooh.
So the body's got to bring water with it. It's pouring all this sugar into your urine. It's going to make that urine so thick, it's got to pull the water with it to keep things diluted. So the higher your sugar is, the more water your body's sending out with it. So you start urinating all the time. And if you're urinating all the time, you're getting dehydrated, so then you get thirsty. So that's when you start to notice in these folks, they're drinking water all the time, they're peeing every 10 minutes. I mean, these guys are just, it's because their blood sugar level is so high, they're trying to excrete it through the kidney, and it's got to pull water with it. So that's your classic kind of symptom. You're real thirsty, and you're going to the bathroom all the time. But by then, I mean, you're in the 300, 400, 500s. And so this is a process that's been going on for years and years and years and years. So you won't notice symptoms until way down the road.
And by the time you notice those symptoms, is it too late?
No, it's never too late. I mean, we've had guys on, you know, with blood sugars 300 to 400 and on 200 units of insulin, and now they're off all these meds, totally normal sugars, normal A1C. So it's a revert. That's the beauty of this. That keyhole can clean right up. As soon as you clean that keyhole up, your insulin fits in. It works beautifully. I mean, it's awesome. So the body's resilient. I never say there's a point of no return until you're 6 feet under. But
yeah, well, right.
So where does hypoglycemia play in all this?
Well, that's that roller coaster. That's when you spike your sugar pretty rapidly, and the best way to do this is through drinking your sugar. So any kind of juice. I mentioned orange juice earlier, but really any kind of juice is pure sugar. And, of course, Coke and, you know, all the sugary sodas. But when you drink your sugar, it gets into the bloodstream extremely fast. So the pancreas almost...
Gatorade.
Yeah, Gatorade, pure sugar too. So the pancreas almost overreacts because you went from, you know, say 75, 80 in your blood sugar all of a sudden to 140 in about 5 minutes when you drink your sugar. So the pancreas quickly ramps up its insulin production, kind of overshoots it a little bit. So you just spit out all this insulin and now you're dropping your blood sugar pretty rapidly. So that's the hypoglycemia. You don't have, what we want is this kind of nice, steady line of blood sugar and insulin all day long, not these huge humps and these huge spikes and the roller coaster effect, because you will drop your sugar quickly when you spit out all that insulin. But over time, if this process continues, your keyhole's messed up, your key's not fitting in it, your sugar stays in your blood instead of getting into your cell. You know, the pancreas keeps putting out more and more insulin because it doesn't know what else to do. All it sees is your sugar's high. And that's what I'm telling you to go measure, is that insulin level. If you're starting to see your insulin levels a little bit high, then that's telling you your pancreas is working hard. I like a fasting insulin. So first thing in the morning or any time, if you're just fasted all day long, less than 5, but optimal is less than 2. If someone's less than 2 on their insulin, I'm really happy. On the A1C, that's your 3-month blood sugar average. I'd like that at 5.3 or below. And the reason is when you get above 5.3, you start to damage cells and tissues of the body. You know, the endocrinologist and the other folks won't call you diabetic until you're maybe 6.5 or 7. But 5.3, we start to see the damage. It's just like, you know, boiling water. Water boils at 212, but... you probably pull your hand out about 140 because that heat from even 140 is going to do damage to your tissue. Same thing with the blood sugar. The A1C, the official name for that is hemoglobin A1C or glycosylated hemoglobin. Glycosylated basically means glucose is infused into that hemoglobin molecule. Hemoglobin is part of your red blood cell. So basically think of it like the sugar coating on a donut. I mean, you got glaze on a donut. Your red blood cells get coated with sugar, with glucose, and we're basically measuring the thickness of that sugar coating on your red blood cell. And a red blood cell lives for 90 days. So that's why it's a 3-month blood sugar average. But it's not just your red blood cell that's getting coated with sugar. Your whole body is. Your arteries are, different proteins in the body. Dr. William Davis really explains this well in his book called Wheat Belly. I highly recommend it. It's the first book I recommend for all the physicians that contact me and ask me questions. And he explains the glycolization of the body. And basically, you're just coating the body with sugar. So AGEs, advanced glycation end products. This is kind of a generic name for different proteins that get coated with sugar, and this is a permanent process. Once these proteins are infused and coated with glucose, there's no reversal of that. So you have these dysfunctional proteins that just can't work right. So we see this in the brain in Alzheimer's patients. Some people call Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes. Because there's such an association with high blood sugar and the little abnormal proteins of the brain that we see in Alzheimer's. But it's throughout the body. It's everywhere throughout the body. That's why diabetes, you see an increased rate of cancer, heart attack, stroke, Alzheimer's. I mean, you name it across the board, all these different diseases you will increase your risk of. And it's because that sugar is coating everything all throughout the body. So it's causing detrimental effects throughout your physiology. But it basically all starts with the diet. When you eat a high carb diet, especially the processed carbs that quickly get broken down into sugar, you're going to see these spikes of insulin. It's going to disrupt your keyhole. Once the keyhole's disrupted, your blood sugar levels just continue to rise. So the take-home message, it's all about the keyhole. It's all about the keyhole. It's not necessarily about your blood sugar level. It's really about, why has my keyhole been out of shape? So I talked last week about chasing fevers with Tylenol. If you've got a leg wound with pus and gangrene in it, and obviously that's going to create fever in your body, and you just treat that with Tylenol, and you're just keep, as long as you keep that number down on the thermometer, 98.6, I'm good. But we all know that you're still going to die because you've got gangrene in your leg. You've got to kill the bacteria in the that's causing the gangrene. So that is exactly the same as blood sugar. Chasing blood sugars with metformin or insulin or any other pill, that's really not the best way to approach this. In fact, there's studies that show that. It was amazing one day I read this study. All these different oral agents for all these different medications for diabetes, and they looked at this group of people over the long haul. It didn't change their long-term outcomes. Morbidity and mortality didn't really change. So maintaining this blood sugar really tight control actually didn't, in the long run, help that much or at all. And it's the same thing. I mean, you can keep your fever down at 98.6 all day long with Tylenol, but you're still going to die because the gangrene is still in the leg. So get to the root cause of the problem, and then the problem goes away. Treat the gangrene with antibiotics and scrub it out with some good stuff, or amputate the leg if you have to. And, I mean, get rid of the problem, and then your fever goes away all by itself. Exact same thing. Get rid of your insulin resistance. Your blood sugar will normalize all by itself. You don't have to chase high blood sugar levels with pills or insulin. And we have a number of patients. This is to be expected. When a type 2 diabetic comes to our clinic, we fully 100% expect them over time to be non-diabetic anymore. I mean, it just happens. It's just like 2 + 2 = 4. It's like you put a pot of water on the stove and turn it up to high, it's going to boil. I mean, there's these laws of nature that God put into the earth, and if you just follow them, you know what the outcome's going to be. It's pretty simple. If carbs is the root cause of what's spiking your insulin, leading to the insulin resistance, don't eat carbs, or eat very few carbs. And that's what we do. We get these patients on high fat, moderate protein, low carb, and we fast them. And boom, their insulin resistance goes away, their blood sugar normalizes, you stop their meds.
Do they have to stay on that kind of diet, though, from then on out, because they've already been predisposed to high insulin and sugars, as opposed to maybe a person that's not? In other words,
it's so individualized. If you get everything else in order, kind of like we mentioned earlier in the show, if you get the stress down, you get make sure the thyroid's right, you've remineralized the body. The body's so deficient in minerals. You get all the other processes working right. They shouldn't be any more predisposed to it than anyone else. However, I will say the things that got them to that point, which is the standard American diet, high carb, if they go back onto that over time, the process will just come back. I mean, it's the same thing.
So it is a total lifestyle change.
Yeah. I mean,
it has to be.
It's a consequence. So therefore, if you input the same stuff that created the problem, if you go back to that same equation, it's going to create the same problem. I mean, it's not.
Right.
It's science, but it's not rocket science, as one of my mentors told me. you want to eat what I call real food. When you eat real food, food that doesn't need a label, doesn't need a food label. So we're talking vegetables, meat, nuts, seeds, eggs, fruit in moderation. You don't have to worry. I mean, you're not going to be doing this insulin spike, blood sugar, insulin spike, and roller coaster if you're eating real food. It's the packaged processed food that's devoid of nutrients. It's full of fillers. It's full of the chemicals. But most importantly, it's full of sugar. And then all the processed grains. So grains is always the big question. And to me, what I try to get people to do once they've normalized their blood sugar, they're off their meds, they're no longer diabetic, we start talking about ancient grains and sprouted grains, and there's not such a glycemic load to those kind of grains. So the original wheat that God made is called einkorn wheat. It has 14 chromosomes. The wheat we're all eating today, the new man-made hybridized man wheat, what is what I call it, has 46 chromosomes. Well, this new wheat that everybody's eating, the starch content of it is different. It's changed since the original wheat because of all the hybridization and the starch content. So it just so happens is very high in amylopectin B, which is a starch that easily converts into blood sugar or glucose. So you get back to your ancient grain or different types of grain, you know, millet and sorghum and arameth and you know, spelt flour. There's different types of wheat or even grains altogether that don't spike your sugar as much. The darker non-polished rices, so black rice, brown rice, there's some rices that don't turn into sugar as quickly. You know, oats, a whole oat or a rolled oat does not spike your blood sugar as quickly as your 1 minute instant oat. Those things have been processed so much they get easily and quickly digested and turned into blood sugar. So we teach our patients about ways to handle grains and get back to kind of some old school grains. And kind of just an easy way to do this is just tracking the glycemic index on the different grains or food in general. So just Google it on your phone, glycemic index and white rice versus glycemic index of black rice or brown rice or glycemic index of, you know, some other grain. And if we, you can keep that glycemic load or index, excuse me, below 55-ish, 50, 55, you're sitting pretty.
And that's so, on a daily basis, 55?
You pretty much all the food going into your mouth. Occasionally you get to a 60 or 70, that's fine. But if you're eating processed wheat, corn, and rice and packaged food with sugar, you're consistently going to be eating glycemic index of 70 to 100 consistently.
Which is not good.
That's not good. What the glycemic index does is measure how much your blood sugar is going to rise when you eat a certain food. So right. You can glycemic index anything, any drink, any food, any ingredient, and it'll give you a number. And so if you're consistently eating stuff in that 70 to 100 range, you're going to be spiking sugar and spiking insulin. Potatoes are another great example. Glycemic index, the white russet potato, I think it's like 110 versus a purple potato, an heirloom purple potato. It's purple all the way through. And the glycemic on that, I think, is like around 60, 55 to 60. Huge difference. So we have our hash browns and our French fries and our mashed potatoes and our baked potatoes and all that stuff, but we use purple potatoes. So, yeah, it looks a little different. You have a glob of purple mashed up potatoes on your plate.
We ate that the other night.
But taste-wise, it's good. And blood sugar-wise, it's great. So it's really just a matter of getting educated, understanding the root cause of the problem is insulin resistance that comes from a high-carb diet and a high-glycemic diet. And just don't eat that way. Pretty simple.
We're going to take a quick break, bottom of the hour, of course, 9:31 the time now. We're listening to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Stick around if you have a question along the way. 745-5800, though. We'll be right back.
Are you experiencing low back pain, neck pain, headaches, or pain as a result of an injury? Then let me introduce you to my chiropractor, Dr. Carla Haddock. Dr. Haddock has been practicing chiropractic care for many years, specializing in diversified treatment, drop table, cold laser therapy, and acupuncture. No expensive treatment plans, and your initial exam is free. If you're looking to improve your health and experience a pain-free lifestyle, then call Dr. Haddock at 239-7190. That's 239-7190. Call for your free initial exam today. Haddock Chiropractic is a proud sponsor of the morning health show, You're the Cure, with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, every Monday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on AM 580 Radio. Haddock Chiropractic, 239-7190.
Listen to your body. It may be telling you it's missing something. When we're missing omega-3s, we can feel run down, stiff, achy, or have a hard time focusing and handling stress. Omega-3s are vastly deficient in the American food supply, and we can't achieve optimal health without them. Nordic Naturals fish oils provide a convenient way to get the omega-3s you need and deliver industry-leading purity, freshness, and taste. Visit Natural Health Market at 4414 82nd Street in the Village Shopping Center.
We're visiting with Dr. Flippin with Exodus New Beginnings. You can always check out the website, exodusnb.com. Go there, check it out. Dr. Flippin, glad to have you on the show today. Tell us a little bit about supportive cancer care.
Well, basically, we just support the patient's immune system, and we do this with several different modalities. We use oxygen in the form of O3. So instead of two molecules of oxygen, we electrically force another molecule in. That's a potent anti-inflammatory. It also causes the patient to secrete tumor necrosis factor. Mm-hmm. So that helps kill the cancer cells. We also use high-dose vitamin C, which is a potent antioxidant, and also it has some anti-cancer properties. And then finally, we use high-dose vitamin B, different vitamin Bs, and those support the patient's immune system so that basically what happens is the patient's own immune system can fight the cancer a lot better.
And this is done intravenously, right?
Right.
Okay, and so the patient comes in, relaxed atmosphere, gets a full rundown of what's going to happen. Of course, there's some diagnosis that goes on in the first phase of this, but fully understanding, you know, what's going on, and then treatment takes place after that, right?
That's correct.
It's very, very interesting, and had a lot of success with this, I hear.
Yes, very, very successful. We have a patient that has stage 4 pancreatic cancer, expected to live 6 weeks, diagnosed in November, who's still going to work every day and feeling great.
Be sure to visit the new location at 7711 Woodrow Road. That's 7711 Woodrow Road, or call 863-3903. That's 863-3903. You can always visit the website exodusnb.com.
Vitamins Plus is a full-line health food store located inside Drug Emporium on the corner of 82nd Slide Road. They have one of the largest gluten-free selections in Lubbock. If they don't have what you're looking for, then it can be special ordered for you. They are Texas-owned and operated for over 20 years. Vitamins Plus carries many locally grown and produced products in the store. Good for you groceries at great for you prices. That's Vitamins Plus, 82nd Slide Road. Come by and see us today.
Welcome back into the program. You're the Cure right here with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Our telephone number at the clinic, 771-1160, 771-1160. All right, we're right back in it. If you have a question along the way, 745-5800. You can also text that in, 806-745-5800. All right, so we spent the first segment of the show talking about type 2 diabetes. Now, I found it interesting that I was watching a football game, and I don't remember, I watched a lot of football on the weekend, and I don't remember where this player was, but he's an athlete in one of the big power schools, and he's one of their starters, and they said, well, you know, he has type 1 diabetes, and they have to check his blood like 3 times during the game. During the game, but he's a real good athlete.
Yeah.
And so type 1, a little different from the type 2 variety.
Yeah, really a whole different animal there. That's an autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. So autoimmune is your own immune system has gotten confused and attacked some of your own tissue. And this can be all throughout the body. So when the immune system attacks your joints, we call it rheumatoid arthritis. When it attacks your skin, it's psoriasis. When it attacks your pancreas, it's type 1 diabetes. So the cells that produce your insulin in the pancreas get destroyed by the immune system. And there's different thoughts as to why that is. Lots of different research going into that. Most of the research right now is stem cells, though. If you can get stem cells for these insulin-producing cells into the body and they start making insulin for you, so, I mean, the future's really, really bright, I think, for type 1. Especially if you're looking at it from a functional medicine standpoint. Most functional medicine docs spend most of their day dealing with autoimmune disease, and we're the only specialty that really does that. I mean, the different, you know, the neurologists deal with MS, which is an autoimmune disease, and the rheumatologist deals with RA, and, you know, there's a different specialist treating the symptoms, but no one's looking at across the board, why is the immune system dysfunctional? But functional medicine docs are making a lot of headway there and seeing reversal and remission or reversal of autoimmune. So when you combine a functional medicine approach, get the autoimmune issue to calm down, and then you can bring stem cells back in to regenerate the tissue that's been damaged. It's going to be amazing. So I think we're really close there. But so type 1s, we see a lot of type 1s, and we approach them the same way, give the body what it needs, avoid what it doesn't, you know, clean them up as best we can, clean the gut up, get the flora back, get all the other hormones normalized, remineralize them, bring their stress down, I mean, all the basic stuff. But we do the same thing with high fat, moderate protein, low carb.
Yeah.
And with these guys and gals, they will drop their insulin requirements dramatically. There's a doctor, Gabriel Cousins, who gets about 25% of his type 1s off insulin, completely off insulin.
Wow.
Now, I mean, that diet is super, super strict, and we don't do that. But we get our type 1s, typically 90% of their insulin requirements go away because they're utilizing fat for fuel, which your body can do. Your cells, I talked about the cells needing glucose or sugar as fuel for the body, but it can use fat for fuel also. And if you just kind of get it trained to do that, it'll start to do that very well. So then you just feed it fat, healthy fat, good fat, not your Crisco and margarine and canola oil. So anyways, type 1s that we see, typically their insulin requirements go way down. They're not on the roller coaster, because otherwise what you do, you're eating a lot of carbs and your blood sugar spikes and you chase it with this insulin and then you drop your levels so low and it's the same roller coaster. It's a little more dramatic and it's hard to do because you've got to be your pancreas. So you've got to check your blood sugar all day long and you've got to poke your finger and give yourself a shot. And it's just a total mess chasing those sugars.
And you can
sugars.
Have a type 1 and 2 diabetic at the same time, right? You can be a type 1 and 2 at the same time?
Yeah, you could have some insulin resistance at the same time. And that's, again...
And that's weird. I mean, I've heard of that. That's a new thing that's kind of sprung up in the past few years.
Right. Well, when we used to just look at it all as high blood sugar, it's kind of the same thing, and you just treat it the same way. But now that we see clearly there's insulin resistance as a root cause of type 2, so if you deal with that, even in a type 1, if you deal with that insulin resistance, you can have some improvement in function. And one thing I didn't mention with the type 2s, typically what happens is they'll gain weight over time, and that's because insulin is our fat storage hormone. So not only is it the key for the keyhole to open the door to let sugar go into your cells, but insulin also fits into the fat storage keyhole. So basically, in order for your body to make fat cells and to store more and more fat cells, you've got to have insulin there sending that message to store fat. The bad part about this, or there's lots of bad parts about it, but one of the worst things is that fat cells themselves produce chemicals that actually make the insulin keyhole worse on blood sugar. So it's this vicious cycle. You're spiking insulin because your blood sugar's high. You store more fat, but those fat cells produce a chemical that causes more inflammation, more disruption of your insulin receptor. So your sugar gets worse, insulin resistance gets worse, and you're just in this vicious cycle. Store fat, insulin resistant, store fat, insulin resistant. So when you can drop your insulin levels aggressively, you get just across the board benefit. You'll lose weight. Your up and down roller coaster goes away. You start burning fat for fuel. You level out your insulin spikes. I mean, it's just awesome. So that's one of my favorite patients now. These patients that have what we call metabolic syndrome. They're obese. They've got high blood sugar, insulin resistance. They've got the cholesterol issues. Triglycerides are high. Maybe hypertension. I mean, these guys just clean right up. It is beautiful. So if all we did was run metabolic syndrome clinics, we could, you know, it'd kind of be a cakewalk. And you would have great results. However, all this is dependent upon the patient doing it. This isn't something in a pill. I can't give a patient a pill that deals with the insulin resistance. The way you deal with insulin resistance is quit eating foods that spike insulin and or just quit eating, so fasting. But all this is stuff a patient has to commit to, and they have to do it. And I had dinner with a doctor here locally in Lubbock Friday night, and he is absolutely fed up with his clinic. From the business side, you know, Obamacare and all the requirements and all these new, they're requiring these doctors, which I'm totally out of this system, so I don't know about this fully, but I knew it was going this way when I got out of the system. But they're going to start docking the doctor's pay. They're not going to get paid as much based off performance, based off, say, triglyceride levels or blood sugar levels, A1C levels of the patient, or if everybody got a flu shot or if everybody's on a statin or all these different parameters. But anyways, he's just fed up, and he loves, and he knows personally that what I'm talking about works because for he and his wife, it helped them with some of their physical problems. So he's all in. I mean, he's on a low-carb kind of diet. He understands the benefit. He's seen the benefit in his family. But his patients, I mean, they're not looking for that answer. They're not looking for a cure or a reversal. They're looking for management. And the problem when you just manage these blood sugars and diseases in general is there's side effects to that. Number one, you're not dealing with the root of the problem, so the problem's still there. You're still going to have effects of that initial problem. But then all the secondary consequences, like I mentioned with diabetes, you increase risk for dementia and heart attack and stroke and cancer. So there's all the side effects of the original problem. And then you throw medications into the mix. Now you're dealing with side effects of the medication. So the patients keep coming back with all these different gripes and complaints, where 90% of those or more, it's all related to this original issue that was never dealt with, but the patient won't deal with it because it involves a change of diet and lifestyle. And this particular doctor was very frustrated because on certain patients, he said he would actually spend 20 whole minutes with them, pouring his heart out to them, showing them the answer, showing them this is the way to go. And it's like in one ear, out the other. I mean, 20 minutes is a long time in conventional medicine to spend with a patient. And that's the frustration that doctors run into when they start to learn the truth and learn that these are reversible consequences. They're not necessarily diseases, quote unquote, that just come out of the blue, out of nowhere. They don't have the time nor the patience of the mindset to make a change or to do any of these things. So it's a very, very difficult situation for the American healthcare system to be in. The truth is out there, but doctors don't know it. And the ones that do start to learn it, the environment in the clinic doesn't allow them to spend enough time to teach it and to sales pitch it and educate and convince that patient and to support them and help them. You know, every clinic really needs a health coach where the doctor can sort of spend his 5 or 10 minutes with the patient telling them, hey, do you want to reverse this? This is reversible. Do you want to? And then kick him to the health coach to do all the education and the convincing and the sales pitch and the support. Take him to the grocery store. Take him shopping. Take him cooking. Show him this is doable. There's plenty of food to eat. It's good food. It tastes great. I mean, my kids just ate this squash recipe up last week that a lady made for us, but she used a ton of butter and a ton of bacon grease. And that's fine. That fat's good for you, actually. I don't know any kid that won't eat veggies that have a ton of butter and bacon grease on them. So there's plenty to eat out there, and there's plenty of ways to prepare it properly. The problem is no one has time. Everyone's too rushed. Everyone's too busy.
Gotta do the drive-through.
Gotta go. We do have some more options. Freshy, now I haven't actually been there, but
I have been.
I've heard really good things. Mm-hmm. What do they have there, Melody?
They have a lot of wraps. They do have some green smoothies. They have some salads. My wrap, I thought I'll get a wrap because that's not what I usually eat, but it had black beans in it and rice and I can't remember what the tortilla was.
I had one of the wraps there. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of paleo, kind of. I mean, and that's the question. I mean, would a paleo top diet be what really we all should be doing? Or
yes.
Okay. Which explain that, because people may not know what that means.
I mean, paleo, I don't know how long that's been around, but a number of years now, basically this group came out, I don't know who started this, but thinking, hey, we need to eat like our ancestors in the Paleolithic era when they were hunter-gatherers. Basically, they hadn't settled into a society where they produce crops like grain products in particular. So you're looking at kind of what I mentioned earlier. If you could pick it, grow it, shoot it, catch it kind of deal. So berries and nuts and seeds and veggies and fruit when it's in season, but meat. And a lot of people on paleo go real heavy on the meat. They're just ton. I mean, they eat, you know, ham, bacon, and sausage in the morning, and a burger without the bun in the midday, and just tons of meat. And that's when you get into a high protein diet. Some of that protein will actually get converted into sugar, and that'll start the whole insulin process again. That's why I say moderate on the protein, high on the fat. But paleo basically is meat and veggies, nuts, seeds, eggs. They don't do dairy and they don't do grains. You know,
what about Mediterranean diet?
Mediterranean uses a little more whole grain. Now, all these diets, Mediterranean, paleo, South Beach, Zone, Atkins, whatever, they're basically kind of all variations of a very similar thought process. Some use a little more carb and try to keep it more of a whole grain. But because our standard American diet, all of us are so addicted to carbs and grains and sugars, I tend to not use those that allow some whole grains because people gravitate to those. You know, even I mentioned the low glycemic grains earlier, like the rolled oats and the black rice and the spelt flour. Initially with my patients, I have to even restrict those because our carb addiction, everyone just gravitates to those so much. Even what you just mentioned, a wrap with beans and rice, though they're black beans and probably it was a healthier rice, if you're doing that every day, that's still carb. So occasionally those are fine, and I eat black beans. Same when you look at black, pinto, navy, you know, the white beans and the glycemic index, you'll see that the darker the bean, the lower the glycemic index. So black beans are a great one to go to. Not that I don't ever eat pinto or white, but it's mainly black is the primary bean that goes in my mouth. But back to the carb deal, so there's healthier carbs, lower glycemic carbs, and when you do get a whole grain, not the modern wheat, again, that one's full of amylopectin B that's turning into sugar, but you can find an ancient grain that's whole grain, like the kamut flour or the kamut wheat berry, the einkorn wheat berry, spelt. Those have less of a glycemic load. So those are okay. But when you go, that Mediterranean diet, when you really go over there in that, you know, Greece, Italy, everywhere, they're eating tons of fish. They're eating tons of vegetables. Everybody's got their own garden. It's picked fresh. So it's a lot of greens, a lot of tomatoes, a lot of vegetables, fresh caught fish. It's not like everyone's sitting over there eating a ton of pasta all day long. And it's not the modern American wheat either. So, but all these diets, the reason they're going to be beneficial is because they're lowering the glycemic, they're lowering the blood sugar and insulin spike. And you do that by eating vegetables, good fats, moderate protein, nuts, seeds.
Well, I guess without saying, though, it sounds to me like that if you're eating that type of diet anyway, I see what you're saying on the glycemic index, but you're also, we would be remiss not to talk about the nutrients you're getting out of it.
Right.
Because, I mean, let's face it, the vitamins and minerals that you're going to get from your food, because your food is your medicine, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so if you're just eating garbage, garbage in, garbage out, I mean, to heck with the glycemic index. That's part of the, that's another layer of nasty. But then you're not absorbing any good quality nutrients off of that.
Yep.
Right? And that's when you have to come in with all the additional supplementation and everything else. I mean, it takes a while to get you, once you got off into that ditch, to get out of that ditch.
Yeah. I mean, even the moment you pick a vegetable or a fruit, from that moment on, even the lettuce, when you pick the leaves, it starts to lose nutrient content. So, I mean, if you're not even eating those things, for sure, you're not getting them. The more they're processed and packaged, the less you're getting. But then even the fresh stuff, when it's picked, you know, 10 days ago or a week ago or picked in South America and shipped here, you're losing nutrient content. But our food is very devoid of minerals. All processed packaged food, pretty much zilch. And then even the fresh foods, I was doing a lecture the other day and looking up all these stats. In 1950, they averaged 4.3 milligrams of iron per one apple. In 1950, 4.3 milligrams. In 1998, there was 0.18 milligrams of iron per apple. So what that translated to was basically 26 apples it would take in 1998 to equal one apple from 1950 as far as the iron content goes.
Unreal.
And that's not getting into all the other nutrient levels. And I've got some graphs that obviously we can't see on the radio, but this is across the board, all the different foods. And there's one graph that looks at the soil mineral content in 1900 and 1910 and 1920 and every 10 years up till 2010. The mineral content, so phosphorus, selenium, copper, magnesium, cobalt, calcium, zinc, iron. The mineral content back in the early 1900s was really good. But you can see this graph just start to decline about 1930, and that's when mechanization of farming kicked in, about 1925. About 1948, ammonium nitrate started to be used for fertilizer. About 1960, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides started being used. About 1995 or so, the glyphosate, which is Roundup, was very predominant. And you can see at each one of these lines, from mechanization of farming to the man-made fertilizer to the pesticides, the mineral content just precipitously drop down to basically zero. And you get to 2010, there are very few minerals. I mean, I'm looking at phosphorus, 50 milligrams of phosphorus, and today there's less than 1 milligram of phosphorus in the soil. So if it's not in the soil, it's not getting into the plant. And this, and part of the problem is when you mechanize farming, when you do the tilling and the soil's uncovered and exposed all the time, that damages the flora in the soil. You don't have the bugs. The fungus and bacteria aren't thriving as much as they could in the soil. And it's the bugs that get the minerals off the stone and pebbles and rocks and all that into a water-soluble form the plant can take up. So this just precipitous decline in minerals in the soil, so our foods don't have the minerals in them, and you can see on this graph just an exponential rise in disease that correlates as the minerals go down, the diseases go up. It's a really interesting graph. but there was a study, one particular study I looked at, and this was from Hort Science Journal. This was, let me see, February of 2009, and what this paper did was study the declining fruit and vegetable nutrient composition, and they were looking at what's the evidence for this. And so basically what these guys did was look at the effect, the dilution effect is what they called it, of phosphorus fertilization in a red raspberry plant. So their control was red raspberry plants that were in soil that was not fertilized. And then they had a plot where they fertilized it with 22 parts per million phosphorus, and then a plot with 44 parts per million phosphorus. So basically they added a little bit of phosphorus fertilizer on one plot and a whole lot on the next plot and none on the original plot. And then they measured the once the raspberry grew and bloomed and they picked the berry, then they measured the nutrient value of each raspberry as far as the minerals, phosphorus, nitrogen, potassium, calcium, magnesium, manganese, copper, boron, and zinc. Across the board, these minerals went down except for potassium went up. But everything else, the mineral content went down with the 22 parts per million phosphorus. And then at the 44 parts per million, it went down even more. And it wasn't just the red raspberry. They went on to look at 20 different vegetables and 20 different fruits, and the same thing was seen. They did 43 of the most common garden crops, the same thing they saw here. And what happens when you put phosphorus, nitrogen, potassium, NPK, the big three that you get at the fertilizer store, you get good green, I mean, you get good growth of the plant. You're going to get volume, you're going to get height, you're going to get growth, you know, just like your grass is going to grow luscious. But it's growing very rapidly, and it's not giving the plant time to deposit all the other minerals. So you're getting tonnage, you're getting poundage, but you're not getting mineralization. And so this has been seen in multiple studies. So it's very, very interesting when you start to look at how demineralized the human body is. And minerals are needed for so many different processes in the body. I mean, there's millions of chemical reactions going on every minute in the body. Every cell of the body requires these different minerals to function. You know, the doorway I talked about for glucose to go into the cell, these doorways or pathways or channels is what we call them in medicine. All these channels are dependent upon different mineral level, you know, potassium and sodium pumps, There's these different pumps that are all, it all boils down to electron charge. You have positive, negative charges of these different minerals, and that's what opens these pathways, open these channels in the cell membrane, not just for your blood sugar, but for everything else. So minerals are needed for all these different processes, and yeah, you'll get them a little bit in the diet. You'll get them a little bit with a generic multivitamin over the counter, but not in the quantities and the quality that you would get from a good food, especially food grown in good soil in the early 1900s. So that's part of the reason we're seeing chronic disease. I mean, the body's very, very resilient. The body will recycle whatever minerals it can. It'll grab whatever you are feeding it and using it to the best of its ability. Fat's another good example. Those cell membranes where all these channels sit, those cell membranes are made of fat. And if you have a pro-inflammatory fat, then you're going to have an inflamed environment. The keyholes get bent out of shape. All those proteins along the cell membrane is what the keyholes are made out of. And those proteins are able to bend out of shape if there's inflammation. And if you have the wrong fat in the cell membrane, that's inflammation. So all of this is interconnected. The cell is the key. The cell membrane is really the key, not the nucleus, the cell membrane. And so much is going on that cell membrane, from the protein content to the fat content, the minerals, channels opening up and closing at the right times. And it's all related to the diet. So that's why we see so much amazing positive results in our patients when all we're basically doing, quote unquote, all you do is change their diet, and that you see this stuff happen. And the answer is yes. And it is, because the food is the medicine. That's what Hippocrates told us 2,000 years ago. And we got way, way, way off base. And we all decided that petrochemical byproduct pharmaceuticals were the cure or the answer to the problem. It never is. A pill will only be able to treat the symptom. It is not going to reverse it, because that's not the root cause. You're never deficient in any pharmaceutical. You may be deficient in magnesium, and probably are. You may be deficient in zinc and phosphorus and copper, and you probably are. You may be deficient in a good healthy fat, the omega-3 fats, because everybody's eating omega-6. We are deficient in a number of things, and that's the cause of dysfunction of your cell. And when your cell doesn't function right, your tissues don't function right, and your tissues don't function right, your organs don't function right, and your organs don't function right, you don't function right. So it's kind of this pretty elementary thought process, but the implications are huge. I mean, patient after patient after patient, we see symptom-free from rheumatoid arthritis, symptom-free from psoriatic arthritis, symptom-free from Crohn's, symptom-free from ulcerative colitis. I mean, we had a 22-year-old boy a couple weeks ago, college kid. He was like 90 pounds when he came to see us. This kid was just sick with ulcerative colitis. And, of course, on the meds to treat inflammation and bring the inflammation down. But in and out of the hospital, can't eat anything. I mean, going to have to cut the colon out. I mean, the kid's dying. And he's totally symptom-free today in a matter of months. I mean, I think it's been 6 months.
Wow.
And it's not that we have any amazing cure for ulcerative colitis. Of course we don't. There's just dysfunction of his cells, of his colon. There's dysfunction because they don't have all they need to operate right, or they have something in them that doesn't need to be there, and they're not able to get rid of it. So detoxification, same thing. To be able to detoxify your body from things that you don't need, whether that be the Zika virus or flu virus, or it be a heavy metal or another toxin that we're breathing in from all the pollution, your body can detoxify itself from all that stuff. But it needs the B vitamins to run your detox pathways. It needs all the different minerals to run your detox pathways. So when I say you got to eat right, and you got to have your minerals in place and the right fats, it's because your body needs it to work right. I mean, I'm not that smart of a guy, but I know the one who is, and that's God. I mean, God designed this thing, and that's a big issue for people that don't believe in God. But it's quite clear this is an amazingly designed piece of physiology, this human body. And it did not just randomly evolve from pond scum. I can guarantee you that. So let's rely on the intelligence, the innate, indwelling intelligence that's in us, that God designed us beautifully. It will function all the days of your life until God calls your spirit home and your flesh falls over dead. give the body what it needs, avoid what it doesn't.
Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, everybody, again, Veritas Medical. Check us out on the web, veritasmedical.com, or call the practice at 771-1160, 771-1160. Thanks, Dr. Edwards. We appreciate that so much. We look forward to seeing you back here next week on You're the Cure, right here on AM 580. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, sir.